Good morning. Welcome back to the second hour of Focus 580, our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. The producers, Harriet Williamson, Martha Deal, Jason Croft is at the control. Sandy Mason is here with us to take lawn and garden questions. She is on the pro month. She's a horticulture educator with Champaign County Extension and stops by, and we do these shows to try to help you out with gardening issues, things like trees and shrubs and houseplants, any and all. If you have a problem, you need help, we can do that. Maybe you're already thinking about what you're going to plant in the season ahead. We can do that. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. We know that, and I know that because people say it all the time, that people really appreciate the opportunity to call in and ask questions of people like Sandy. We have some other guests. We have various kinds of doctors, and we have an auto mechanic, and Sandy stops by here and does these shows. We do some programs that are just aimed at, we have our home maintenance guy. We have some of these shows that are aimed at answering practical questions. And then any day on every subject, there's always the opportunity to ask questions. And people tell us that they really appreciate hearing the discussion and being able to take part in it. So we like to do that. What we do here is we, you know, do that every day, and we like to concentrate on that. Occasionally, we do also have to take time to ask people to support the station. But over time, what we have tried to do is spend less time doing that so we can spend more time doing the programs that you appreciate. That's why we thought for this February drive, what we would do is, well, we're just going to do one day. It's a one-day fun drive. We started this morning. We'll end at 7 o'clock when we start our primary election coverage. And what we're trying to do here is raise the amount of, in one day, we're trying to raise the amount of money that it takes to run the station for a month. That's $80,000. That's a big chunk of change, but we're making good progress, and we really believe we can do it with your help. What you need to do is just take a second here and decide, well, what's WILO worth to you? How much do you listen during the day? How many hours? How many days a week do you listen? Just do it yourself. Put a dollar figure on that. You know, maybe you'd say, well, you know, I listen many days during the week. Maybe I'll give you a dollar for every week in the year. How about that? $52. Some people might even say, you know, I could see my way to giving you a dollar a day. No, not everybody can do that. But you can decide on something in between the 52 and the 365. That's completely up to you. What is important is that we can count you as a financial supporter of the station, which means you help pay the bills to keep us on the air. That's the deal. And we're hoping that by the end of the day, we'll get as close as we possibly can to raising that $80,000. And with your help, we're pretty confident we can do that. So now's the time to make that pledge. 217-244-9455 is the phone number to call if you'd like to do it that way. And you can also go online to willpledge.org and make your contribution like that. And we'd just like to take a second here to thank a few folks, William Greeno in Champaign, Dave Hughes in Palestine, Illinois, Herbert and Jane Lasky, they live in Ashmore, and Larry Simonton in Cerro Gordo. We want to say thanks to them and everyone else who has called in and made a contribution, made a financial contribution to keep this station strong and keep the station on the air. And if you're not yet among them, now's a great time. You can call us right now, 244-9455, or as I said, you can go online to wellpledge.org. Sandy Mason's here with us, and we're pleased that she could be here. We're just talking about the fact that she's now been a guest on Focus 580 for 15 years.
Hard to believe, isn't it?
It is kind of hard to believe.
How time flies when you're having fun, huh?
I got to tell you something. She just hasn't aged a day.
I think we're both a little grayer.
Okay, a little bit, but we haven't lost our youthful enthusiasm.
There you go. Good save.
We leap out of bed every morning with a song in our hearts. Yeah, exactly. So, we're happy here to answer your questions, just like we always do when Sandy is here. And again, 333-9455 to call in. No one expects you to pledge. That would be great. We hope you will, but you don't have to do that to call in. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. And we have a caller here to start us off in Urbana. We'll do that. Line one. Hello.
I have a song in my heart and rain in my ditch.
I have water in my basement.
Really? So,
yeah. Oh, yeah. It's not good. Hmm. What I have that I'd like to ask about is I have about maybe it seems like miles, but maybe a quarter mile long stretch along an ever increasingly busy road. And I'd like to put some evergreens along my woods along the road. These evergreens would be backed up by woods, and they would be facing east. And now I'm thinking hemlock, but I don't know. Got any ideas?
So is this strictly for privacy kind of thing, or noise, or what were you thinking? Or both?
Noise, because the woods are plenty, give us plenty of privacy. It's just that there's an increasing amount of traffic on that road, and I really would like to cut down on some of the noise.
Mm-hmm. Is there an issue with salt spray or anything like that along the road?
There's a pretty good setback at the moment, but my guess is 130, and my guess is they're going to be widening 130.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. It doesn't have to be hemlock. It's just something green.
Right.
Always green, evergreen.
Yeah, right, right. And then, so I take it you have a pretty good space there as far as how much width it can
right.
go?
Right, and I would happily trim back some of the stuff at the edge of the woods.
So we could get even like 20, 30 feet wide and that'd be fine?
Oh, yeah.
For whatever this is? Oh, okay, so you're not quite restricted. Okay. Well, and that's fine. I think, you know, hemlock are certainly nice in the sense that they do tolerate some shade. So even though it's on the east side, you're going to get some sun, unless there's, you're going to get at least morning sun. So, most of the evergreen things are going to tolerate that if they're going to get at least, one would hope at least 5-6 hours, before they, but hemlock do actually tolerate quite a bit of shade. So that would certainly be one thing. Actually, I don't know how you feel about yews. They're obviously, it's going to take a little bit longer for them to get taller, but it tends to be a thicker kind of foliage than necessarily what we see with hemlocks, although hemlocks will take some pruning. If you truly want to sort of thicken them up, they'll actually tolerate that quite well. I don't know how you feel about spruces. It sounds like you've got enough space there that you could do a lot of the different evergreens and not feel like you're going to have a big issue.
Maybe a monoculture might not be the best thing, and to have a little bit of everything.
Right, and you're right, absolutely.
Well, that sounds like more fun.
Yeah, and you're right. The more diversity you get in there, the better. So I would think about, spruces are nice in the sense that they tend to hang onto their needles longer than pines do. Pines tend to lose their lower branches and drop more needles. So it's not as thick. So you'd probably want something that's going to maintain those needles longer. So I think spruces, Doug firs might be good. All of those I think would be good selections in there. If you really think there's going to be a lot of salt spray, junipers are actually really good for that and certainly fast growing. They do have some issues, of course, with bagworms and a few other kind of insect issues. But those are certainly be fast growing and tolerate salt quite well. So it sounds like you've got a lot of opportunities there where you could get some things and probably actually a very good wildlife habitat with the woodland. And
I went out to scare off the starlings off the suet yesterday, and I put up about, 8 pheasants.
Oh, really? In that area?
They were fabulous going up into the fog. I tell you, I don't think I've seen such an interesting sight for some time. So, and they would be happy in there because we hear them squawking in the woods.
So those might be good selections. And actually, if you wanted something that really needs to be pretty tough, you could even think about things like, even red twig dogwood, some of the shrubbier things that sort of get something going on in there, fairly quickly while these other things get bigger.
How about cedar?
Well, cedars would be that they're a type of juniper.
Oh, okay.
And those would be fine. They're another one. They're certainly fast growing, tend to be fairly inexpensive, all those things. But they do have a few insect problems with bagworms and a few things. But like you say, if you don't do the whole thing in cedars or junipers, then you'd be good. And certainly they have some nice berries on them that the birds like.
Right. Is there any problem with that being, is it an intermediate host for a rust?
Yeah, there is a cedar apple rust, cedar hawthorn rust, which are a couple of the fungal diseases that cedars / junipers is really what they are, will certainly serve as an alternate host. So that could be an issue. But to be honest with you, there's generally so many cedar trees around there anyway. Usually somebody's got a bunch of them anyways. Sometimes that's kind of hard. But if you had an apple orchard, I'd be much more concerned about that.
Yeah, no, okay. And there isn't one real close by, so that shouldn't be a problem. All right, well, I like the idea of mixed media here. So I think a little bit of everything, and that'd be more fun to plant and more interesting to watch and grow. So I think I'll give that a try.
Sure. Well, good luck.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. Our guest here this morning in this part of Focus 580, Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with Extension, U of I Extension in Champaign County. And once a month on a Tuesday, she's on the program and we talk about lawn and garden care. And whatever questions you have, again, maybe you're looking for a suggestion for a particular kind of plant, you have a space and you're not really quite sure what would be right for that, you got some kind of problem you want to talk about, any and all of that, you just give us a call, 333-9455, and toll-free, 800-222-9455. We have someone else here to talk with, and this is a caller in Champaign in line two. Hello.
Hi.
Mm-hmm.
Hi. I was hoping to grow sweet potatoes this summer.
Mm-hmm.
I know I'm going to try them under black plastic to try to heat the soil as much as possible, but do you know of any certain, like, varieties that might do better this far north, or any tricks, maybe start them inside early and then move them out, or any suggestions?
Yeah, well, probably the biggest thing with sweet potatoes is that they hate cold weather. So you really have to pay attention to when you put them out to make sure that you don't put them out too early. That's probably the absolute best thing. If you can get kind of a jump start, you know, if you can get them early enough and actually go ahead and pot them up, that's wonderful. You know, if you have an opportunity to do that, or if you have even a place where you can do that, sometimes that ends up being a little bit tougher. So you might try, there's one called, it really kind of depends. Some of them vine a lot more than others. So
yeah, I've got room, so that is really an issue.
So there's a number one. I think there's one called Vardaman. There's Puerto Rico, which doesn't vine quite as much. I would just really look for any of those that are available. I don't think you're going to have a big problem. Really, they're all going to be fine, to be honest with you. We really don't have.
I'm not sure if we had a long enough growing season, really, to have them produce well here.
Yeah, I'm not sure I've ever seen any in the catalogs that wouldn't grow well here. If they do, they'd say for southern climates only or something like that.
How about like a field pea or Crowder pea, like a dry type of a bean or pea like that? Can those do okay here?
Sure. You know, absolutely. They're another one of those that likes warm weather. So just don't put them out too early. That's probably one of the big things. And generally from seed, those are fine. And you really shouldn't have any big problems with those, too. Those do well. Peanuts are about the only thing that we have trouble with in that kind of category.
Okay. Well, it sounds easier than I thought. Great.
Yeah, sure. No, go for it.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. And our next caller here, again, we'll talk with somebody in, this is someone in Champaign, in line one. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of quick questions. I think my first interest would be in a small tree bush, perhaps size, called a butterfly ginkgo. Do you know anything about them in this area?
I'm not familiar with that particular cultivar, but I assume it's just one of the many cultivars of ginkgos.
It is, but it's a very small one,
mm-hmm.
and I'm thinking about something. It can't be too tall because mm-hmm. of the power lines. It's got to be fairly near some frighteningly bad Asian elms that are going to come down, but over time.
Right.
And I'm hoping for some great fall color. We love the ginkgo yellow. And then we're hoping for a small tree that would be the more orange, you know, scarlet maple type colors that would also be under 20 feet tall.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Any suggestions?
Wow, more of a scarlet kind of a color. Actually, there's a bunch of different maples that are out there, paperbark maples. There's full moon maples. There's a bunch of different maples than our typical ones we might think of, Amur maples. And they tend to be on the red to purple kind of range
uh-huh.
for most of those. But those would be ones you might want to check into. And they're all small trees for the most part.
And any that do particularly well in this area?
I think they'll all, you know, probably the biggest thing for some of those, certainly like paper bark maple, that sometimes they're a little bit harder to find, but a beautiful bark for the winter color. They're just gorgeous for that. Probably a little slower growing. But most of the other ones, I think, really do fine. I don't think there's a big issue. I think with the ginkgo, and maybe you just don't really care, but with a lot of the ginkgos, they're really very slow to get established.
Ah.
And so you have, and then especially if this is a smaller one, which I've certainly seen some dwarfs in some of the ginkgos, they're really slow. And if that's okay, and it sounds like you don't want it to have much height, then I'd say go for it.
Okay. Okay, great. Thanks
mm-hmm.
so much.
Sure.
All right. Thank you. And we'll continue here and talk with someone in Rossville, line number three. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I have a question about euonymus that is dying.
Mm-hmm.
I've noticed a lot of it around late, especially in my yard, and that it turns kind of white, and then it just seems to die. And I wondered what the problem was and what to do about it.
So this is a ground cover type euonymus?
Yes, it is.
I assume that's doing that? Yeah, unfortunately, euonymus get a couple different problems. Probably one of the big things is that they get scale. And
okay.
Maybe that's what you're saying when you said it turns white.
I think it is.
There's like these whitish kind of elongated blobs all over the mm-hmm. leaves as well as the stems. Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. So they get scale. And unfortunately, it is one of those things that's almost a regular occurrence with those guys. So you kind of figure that's one of the things that's just going to happen with those. So do you have a lot of this? Is there quite a bit of it?
Well, it's basically concentrated in one area. I have like a little hedge of this euonymus.
Okay.
I forget the variety that grows sort of like that. But
okay. Well, the reason I ask is that if you can prune off as much as of the really bad stuff that you can, that helps because you get rid of some of the populations of the insects there. And then you are going to have to do some spraying because generally you're not going to be able to take care of it any other way. And for euonymus scale, which is I assume what it is, you'd actually be spraying in early June. The one thing with scale insects is that you really have to figure out which one it is, and then timing is so important because when they're not, once they're in those little shell-like things, they're very protected, and sometimes it's tough to kill them off. And so timing is real important with those guys.
Okay.
But the nice thing is you can use things like insecticidal soap. You know, if you want to use something least toxic, so
yeah.
You certainly could use insecticidal soap. You can use what are called summer oil sprays. You could do a dormant spray, but I'm not sure it's going to help you all that much with euonymus scale, you know, where you actually spray when they're dormant.
Right. I'm familiar with that with trees. But
right. And you certainly can do that, but then you definitely in early June, you can use the same – usually it's the same horticultural oil. You just dilute it more, and you can use it as a summer oil, and then you'd spray it again in early June. So cut off as much as you possibly can and then, you know, get it out of there.
Right.
And then just realize you're going to have to do some spraying in order to take care of it. And
thank you.
Thank probably going to have to watch it for a couple of years.
Okay. Yeah. I'll be happy to do so. And
okay.
I really appreciate your help. You do a great job.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the
bye-bye.
Call. We have some other callers here. We'll go on in just a second. We want to remind people who are listening that we're also here raising money for WILL. This is our one-day February fund drive. We'll be going until 7 o'clock tonight. Then we start our election coverage on WILL AM/FM. So if you're following that, we'll give you the opportunity to find out what's going on. And, of course, it's a big day in politics across the country. But here it's a big day for us because we're working on raising $80,000. That's what it takes to power the station for a month. We're trying to do that in one day. So far, we've heard from 181 folks, 181 pledges, and we have a little over $26,000 in raised so far. So we're making good progress. But the only way that we're going to make that goal is if we hear from, well, as many people as we possibly can. Jack Brighton is here in the studio with me. He's the guy who's in charge of our web operations at WILL.
Right. Right. And right now the phone number to call is 217-244-9455 with your contribution. Or visit us online at willpledge.org and contribute with your credit card right there on the spot. And ask yourself, what would you pay for advice and ideas that you gather from the guests on Focus 580? 10 cents a day, 30 cents a day, a dollar a day? You decide. And then call 217-244-9455 to support news and information and all the great shows that you hear on Focus 580 right here on AM 580. And each and every dollar that you contribute will be used to support the programming you enjoy every day here on WILL. 217-244-9455. Very simple message right now. Very quick. That's the number to call right now.
Yeah. I want to mention that Sandy was good enough to bring in some books here to help us to use as an incentive. And I don't know about you, but at home in my house, at my desk, I've got a desk calendar there that I try to keep track of what it is that I'm supposed to be doing any day. And what this is kind of like that.
Mm.
It goes through the year, month by month.
Yes.
And it's a reminder of various things in the garden that maybe you want to be thinking about and doing at any time. Sandy, you want to talk a little bit about what's in this book?
Yeah, we actually developed this locally, My Garden Journey, and it's the whole. It's kind of a calendar, but yet not. It does go month by month, and it's everything from what do I need to be doing my fruits, my vegetables, flowers, lawns, and then we tried to leave plenty of room so that you can make notations. Like the gentleman that just called, he's got his euonymus that he has to be concerned about in scale. Well, he can write in here in early June, make sure I spray the euonymus. So it's a great way to sort of keep track of the things that you need to do. And, you know, so many of the things that we get questions about here on the show are timing. Is it okay to move my hostas now? Is it okay, you know, when do I do things? And so, you know, for a lot of people, especially if you're new to the area or maybe new to that particular plant, sometimes it really is tough to know all those different things and to remember them year after year. So it really is a nice booklet, and I think is really very useful for people. So,
oh yeah.
So why don't we just say anybody who will call in a pledge between now and noon and until we hand them all out. And I think, Sandy, you said you brought
12.
Okay. So if you call in your pledge this morning here in this hour, Focus 580, so we have about another half an hour, we'll send one of these along to you with our thanks. And I think it's a really handy thing for you to have to keep track of, you know, what you want to do in the garden.
Mm-hmm. So, and it's pretty, too.
And it's a very nicely done publication.
Thanks.
So what you want to do is you want to call us at either 244-9455. That's the number. Or you can go online. We have a website. You can pledge willpledge.org. You can do it that way. And I think probably, do you think, Jack, more and more people are pledging that way? Pledging
absolutely
online?
The trend is, you know, like probably double every year, and that's good because more people are going online. They're, you know, finding it very useful. They can find our archives online, hopefully leaving something in the tip jar along the way at some point. And you know, the place to do that is again willpledge.org, and it'll just take you about a minute.
All right, well, we got a caller here who's waiting. We want to get to them. And if other folks who are listening, you have garden questions, give us a call. You can talk with our guest, Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County, and she is here on the program once a month. It's always a Tuesday when she's here, and she does her best to answer your questions. 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana, toll-free 800-222-9455. The caller here is in Indiana on our toll-free line, line 4. Hello.
Hello. Unfortunately, the gardener types are not here, but I'll ask the question with some information. We're going to be moving to another place, and I heard the quote-unquote women talking last night that we're going to take shoots from certain things,
mm-hmm.
and one is a lilac bush.
Mm-hmm.
And in particular, I'm interested in that myself, and I'm wondering what's the proper method of taking a shoot that you want, hopefully will regrow when you move it to another land, be in the same area, same city, and that sort of thing.
So mm-hmm. there's
many difference in soils
mm-hmm.
or temperature or anything like that.
Okay. Well, usually with, depending on how they're growing, but most of the time with lilacs, especially if it's the old-fashioned type, they send up suckers.
Yeah.
And so you'll see these little sprouts kind of popping up here and there. And those are the ones really pretty easy to go ahead and dig them up, try to get as much of the root as you can, you know, pot them up. And actually, they move. I've actually gotten a couple of lilacs that way, and people have passed them around, that kind of thing that way. So if you find those young suckers, and usually the ones that are probably do well, you know, if they're at least a foot tall, kind of in that range, maybe a little bit taller. Those are really kind of the fairly new ones and still pretty succulent and ready to go.
Okay. Well, I'll pass that on and duck.
Good luck.
All right. Thank you. Other questions are welcome. 333-9455. Toll-free 800-222-9455. It is something of an understatement to say the weather lately has been a little erratic.
Wow.
Last week, for example, I think it was last week, Tuesday, around the middle of the day, around lunchtime, it was 55. And then by 4 o'clock, I think, it was below freezing. We get rain. We get snow. We get fog. It's warm. It's cold.
We get thunder.
Last night we had thunder and lightning. One thing I guess I'm particularly thinking about is if you have a day like that where at noontime it's 55 and then at 4 it's below freezing, I guess there's not really a whole lot you can do about that, doesn't that? But put a lot of stress on the plants?
It really does. And probably the one thing maybe that might be the saving grace is that it has been fairly cold, you know, here where a lot of things haven't started to really get out of dormancy yet, at least not that what I've seen. And so that's the good news. If they're still dormant, they can really take, a lot of plants can take really cold temperatures. But once we start getting into, you know, late February, March, April, where things are starting to come out of dormancy, and then we were to get that same cold snap, then you'd see definitely, you know, die back of branches. So it really depends on where they are kind of in their dormancy. So we're hoping that most things were, you know, fairly dormant so that they could go ahead and take that cold weather. But, you know, just like we happened, you know, last year in April where we had that really severe cold snap. And a lot of things we saw dieback on that we wouldn't normally have seen.
Yeah. So in terms of coming out of dormancy, is what is more important? Is it temperature or is it day length that the plants know what time of year it is?
Right. It's really probably more temperature than anything.
Most of
them have some sort of, in the temperate zone here, most of them have some sort of what's called a chilling requirement, where they have to go through so much chilling before they'll actually break their dormancy. And it depends on from plant to plant on what that might be. So once they go through their chilling requirement and get that period of cold temperatures, and usually it's 35 or below, so somewhere around freezing or below, and that's enough. Once they get that chilling requirement, if it's starts to warm up, they're already ready to go. So, you know, it really does depend a lot on that and depend on the plants. But for most of our plants, you know, they take a fairly long chilling requirement, so they don't pop out too terribly early. But you get things like, you know, things like apricots and some of the things that really bloom early, cherries and some things. The flower buds are the things that are not terribly hardy. So sometimes the plant will live, but then we'll lose the flowers, which is what we really saw with lilacs last year. We're talking about lilacs. They really didn't flower very well this past year because of that April cold snap.
Yeah.
So a lot of times it doesn't kill the plant, but, you know, we might lose the part that we really, you know, like the flowers or whatever.
All right. Let's talk with somebody in Mattoon, line 4. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I have some very old flame bushes, and they seem to come out in the spring, and then they lose their leaves, and they're ugly most of the summer. Mm-hmm. And I wonder what you would recommend, removing them and planting something different, or is there a spray that may be sprayed on them?
Mm-hmm. So I assume these are like burning bushes or?
Yes.
Burning bushes.
Burning bushes.
Sure. And those would be another one. They're actually another type of euonymus. We were just talking about euonymus, but
there's
another type of euonymus. And I'm not sure why they're necessarily, they do get a few insects, maybe not quite as much as the ground cover type, but they do get some few insects, and I wonder if that's not what's going on, why they're turning yellow and falling off, or the leaves are falling off, because they wouldn't obviously normally do that. So my guess is that probably you're in Mattoon, I think you said. You might want to take it to your local extension office and find out, you know, take a sample of it, you know, once they start to leaf out, and if it seems like they're doing it again, take a sample in and see, and they can see if maybe there might be an insect or disease problem that might be doing that. And if you're sure it wasn't, that it was just really dry or anything like that, that might have cause them to drop their leaves?
It's hard to say.
It seems to do it every year?
Yes.
I'd almost bet that's some kind of insect disease kind of thing.
Sometimes the leaves look like they have a little dust on them, you know, white, like mildew.
Right. Which they do, sometimes they will get a powdery mildew kind of thing, but usually they don't go ahead and drop their leaves necessarily.
Uh-huh.
But that definitely would be something you'd want to check on and see if you can figure out what's going on.
You don't have any advice on a spray offhand?
Well, until we would find out whether it's an insect or disease
issue. Oh, I see.
Yeah, then they would be able to tell you what spray might, you know, if that would be something that might be effective.
And where would that office be in my area? Would it be Charleston?
Yes. You're Coles County, I think, aren't you?
Yes.
Coles County, yeah. It's in Charleston. And just check under Coles. It's either under U of I Extension in the phone book or it's under Coles County.
All right. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you. Let's talk with, again, here's someone in Indiana, line 1. Hello.
Yes. Good morning.
Yes.
Just heard the comment about euonymus, and I wondered whether there was any concern over in Illinois about euonymus becoming an invasive species. I planted some, probably 10 years ago, and I've noticed over the last few years that there are numerous little plants, maybe up to a foot and a half high, growing around the edge of my property.
Mm-hmm.
I wondered whether that was of concern to anybody, since we have other invasive species that we're now worried about.
Right.
I'll hang up and listen offline if that's convenient.
Yeah, sure.
That's fine. And you're absolutely right. Euonymus is one of those ones that we are concerned about burning bushes. The thing that I've noticed is it's one of those things that some of them don't seem to set fruit as much as other ones, because it's really the fruit. The birds are eating the fruit, and then they're passing it around. It ends up in woodland areas, and then absolutely, you're absolutely right in the sense that they are an issue in some of the woodland areas especially. So and I'm glad you brought that up. It'd be one of those things that I would really, you know, if I saw something like what you were mentioning or starting to pop up here and there, I'd probably really think about seriously about maybe getting a different plant or pruning it so it doesn't flower and set seed. You know, there might be some issues there. But unfortunately, we have a lot of plants out there that are like that. You know, barberry is another one that unfortunately is really hasn't been a very good neighbor. So.
Okay. Well, again, other questions are welcome. You want to talk with Sandy, 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana, toll-free 800-222-9455. I think, to me, one of the greatest things about early spring is that, or it can be, if you plant the right kind of stuff, very early you're going to start to see flowers. Mm-hmm. And there are certain particularly kind of flowering bulbs, and you know maybe people think about tulips and hyacinth and daffodil and crocus and things like that. But there are things that will flower even earlier. And to me is, you know, the great things, for example, when you say in our yard, we have a lot of snowdrops. Mm-hmm. So when the snowdrops come, you can start to say to yourself, well, winter will end. There will be spring.
There's hope.
And there are other things like that. Now, this is now, of course, if you want them in your yard, this fall,
there's a catch to that.
That's right. If you'd like to have them in the spring, it's too late for the spring. You can have them next spring, but that means you have to put them in next fall. But are there anything in particular that kind of stands out in your mind as being something of that kind, a very early flowering thing that, obviously, as I say, people will have to, you have to put them in the fall, and then you can see them in the spring of '09. But it's a really wonderful
patience
thing.
Patience is a virtue. Yeah. Snowdrops are probably the ones that people think of the most often, and they're probably one of the ones that's going to pop up first, which hence the name. And literally, they've come up through the snow, so really early. But there's some other things there. Winter aconite is another yellow. It looks more like a buttercup looking thing, but again, very small. There's some very early crocus that you can get that will also bloom very early. So you know, most of these, certainly by, you know, end of February, certainly I've had, you know, mid-February, I've had snowdrops blooming. But by the 1st of March, most of these things are really coming on. So those would be another one. Grecian windflower. There's lots of these little, they call them minor bulbs, which I don't think is really a very fair name to call somebody a minor bulb, because they really are very important, you know, very early in the season when few other things are flowering. So those would be really good ones to put in. There's also a perennial called hellebore, which is another very early blooming, and actually is a very early blooming perennial. And so there are actually even a few perennials in there that start to flower fairly early, but the bulbs by far are the ones that are going to come up quickly. And
what kind of life do these bulbs have? Will they keep, because some things, tulips, for example, it seems that some of them will bloom for a few years and then they just won't do it anymore. And I know in our yard, we've been living in that house for, I don't know, 18 years or something like that. And then snowdrops were put in long before we got there, and they're still seem to be doing really, really well.
Yeah, and I would say most of those minor bulbs do a very good job. That some of them actually reseed themselves in a nice way, not in a, you know, an orderly way. They'll actually reseed themselves, and so you get bigger populations within that, you know, where the area, they'll get a little bit bigger and bigger. And so it's really kind of nice to do that. But they're very long-lived. As long as they make it through that first year where the rabbits don't dig them up or the squirrels don't dig them up, then you're in pretty good shape once they get going. So those are actually all really good ones. And if you ever make it out to Allerton Park, they have this one area when you first drive in where the snowdrops and the winter aconite have just naturalized themselves. Mm-hmm. It's this huge area, and it's just beautiful to see that really early in the spring like that.
Yeah, see, that's one of the aconite is something that I've always thought it would be really nice, and I keep – what I need to do is get my calendar out and write down next fall, write down – plant winter aconite, because it's such a dramatic, it's a really brilliant yellow flower, and so I'm sure it would be really dramatic out there. The snowdrops are really, really nice, but I'd like to get some more color going on there.
And blue scillas are really nice. The Siberian squill are really nice. That intense cobalt, put that with that, you know, those winter aconites.
And those guys, man, they will, and in fact, I think it may be, I don't know if people are upset by how those guys do naturalize, yeah, because there's a certain, at least maybe it's just around where I live in Urbana during the springtime. It's everywhere, and it's in people's lawns, and everywhere.
But the good news, you know, they're spring ephemerals. They come up, they do their thing. The foliage eventually dies down, and you don't really even notice them, you know, through the summer. So they're not obnoxiously overwhelming.
We have about 15 minutes left in this part of the show with Sandy Mason, and I do, again, want to urge folks to help us out with this one-day pledge drive. We're trying to raise $80,000. We will go until 7 o'clock tonight. We picked that number, that $80,000, for a couple of reasons. One is that's how much it takes to run the station for a month. So we wanted to see, can we run a month's worth of money? Can we raise a month's worth of money in one day? Also because when we found out what our state funding situation was, that's the amount of cut that we got. So we're trying to also make that up and just continue with this kind of project that we have throughout the year to make sure that now, and we're raising money now for the programs in the next fiscal year that starts on the 1st of July. So all through the year, we're trying to keep pace, and as we go from day to day and month to month, to make sure that then we have the money in the bank for next year. So this is one little piece of it. We're trying to spend less time on the air raising money. So we said, well, why don't we try and we'll just do a day and see what we can do and see if we could raise that $80,000 in one day. Jack Brightness here with us. He oversees our web operation. I'm told where everybody has been calling in asking, they want the book that Sandy has mentioned.
I want the book.
Now,
you have to pledge.
I will.
Yeah. And Sandy brought a dozen, and I don't know if we've now, is possible to get more?
Yes. Okay. You guys, yes.
Oh,
for you guys,
you're so sweet.
We could do that.
All right. Well, anyway, so I foolishly said, well, anyone who called in with a pledge will send you one of these, and I guess we caught fire with that.
Good.
So that's good. So we'd be very happy to hear from folks making a pledge this morning. You can call at 244-9455. You can go online at willpledge.org. This man here, Mr. Brighton, he's behind that whole web deal.
You betcha.
He was the guy who was responsible for the web. I think he's responsible for the web.
Not my fault, okay?
Have any problems, he's the guy who's responsible.
I can't fix it if it's broken.
Okay.
No. Actually, what I wanted to say is if you go online and pledge and you want the book, you can just note that on the pledge form because there's a space there for your comments. So if you go to willpledge.org to make a pledge, if that's easier for you than making a phone call, then just if you want the book, make a note there and we'll make sure you get a copy.
Okay. Sandy's going to be really unhappy if she's got to pony up 50 copies.
I know.
We may have to actually pay for them. Well, that's okay.
She makes us feel so special.
Work something out.
Oh, okay. That's very good. Well, see, she's been very generous here, obviously, for the past 15 years.
Well, we'll pay her double her rate for doing the show.
Don't make promises like that. She's been good enough to do this. A lot of, you know, we have a lot of other folks who stop by on a regular basis. And then over time, it's a staggering number of people who have been on the show as guests. And what's amazing to me, one of the amazing things, is that generally, everybody's really nice and they're really happy to be on the show and they're eager to have the opportunity without obstructions to talk about whatever it is their thing is. You know, they're obviously passionate about something. They have an issue. They have a cause. They have something that they've devoted a lot of time and thought and study to. And we say to them, okay, you can come on the show and we got 50 minutes and we're going to talk about it for 50 minutes and we're not going to stop for commercials. We're really going to concentrate on the subject. And guests appreciate that. Listeners appreciate that too. This is a rare exception.
That's right. But I have to hasten to add,
yes,
that to provide this kind of radio, we need to pay the bills. And we count on listeners like you listening to this to help by making a contribution today. This one-day fund drive needs your response right now. If you've never pledged before, especially, we'd love to get some new contributors to the station here. And the number 217-244-9455. It'll just take a minute. You'll be on and off the phone in no time at all. The volunteers are waiting for you, 244-9455, or contribute online at willpledge.org.
All right, thanks. We want to get back to talking here about gardening with Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension Champaign County. Once a month on a Tuesday, she's here, and we talk about lawn and garden care. And this is your chance to call in with a question. Maybe you've got a problem and you're not quite sure how to solve it. Maybe, as some of the other callers have done, you're interested in, you have a particular spot in your yard and you want to get some advice on what might be a good plant for that spot, you know, given the given how much sun it gets and given where it is and given what the conditions are in that space and what you want, Sandy maybe can suggest something. Any and all of that, 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. At this point, aside from looking through your gardening catalogs and looking through books to get ideas, is there anything that really, other than make planning, trying to think about what you're going to do, is there anything that really one could actually be doing outside?
Now that we've entered February, you can really start thinking about doing pruning when it comes to fruit trees and grapes mm-hmm. and some of those. So if you really need to do that, you know, really, hopefully you've gotten through the really cold stuff. So generally that's why we say wait till February, early March. And, you know, we've had such odd years where sometimes it's really warmed up fairly quickly, and we'd like to have most of that pruning done before they get out of dormancy. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of nice to get that done. So certainly I think through February you could do that, early March. So that'd be another thing. You know, on a nice day, hey.
Okay, and the way things are going here, yeah, we could come along and have another one of those 16, days. It could be 55, and you start thinking, well, it's pretty nice. I'd like to be out there. And the next day it could be... Yeah. We could have sub-zero wind chills. So, you know, take your opportunities where you can.
Yeah, yeah. And actually, if you've got a lot of pruning to do, it's good to go ahead and stretch that out, too, so they can get that done. Because we don't always know what kind of, you know, late February, early March we're going to have.
Now, just real quick, a practical question on pruning. One thing that you want to be really careful about is with your tools, if you might potentially have some kind of disease problem or something mm-hmm. on one mm-hmm. plant. Mm-hmm. You don't want to take it and spread it right. from one plant to the next. So as you're pruning, what would you suggest? What's the recommendation for cleaning your tools as you go along?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and you're absolutely right, especially with fruit trees. There's a lot of diseases, you know, fire blight is certainly something that can go rampant through plants if you're not paying attention and really cutting things out. Well, so your best bet is that if you can have like either a spray bottle of alcohol or even, you know, sometimes I've just put it in a little Tupperware container and I actually just dip your tools in between each cut. So it's not just in between each plant or in between each tree, it's in between each cut. Mm-hmm. Because especially if you have any issues, you know, you're looking at it and it looks like, you know, there's definitely some dieback or something that's not quite right, I think you're better off just to do that, take care of it, and not have to worry about it. You can use bleach, but I have found that I get then I end up with these white spots all over my clothing. So I decided a few years back that bleach, just I was just way too messy to use bleach. So I decided to go with the alcohol route. But just to realize that afterwards, make sure that you oil your tools afterwards, because alcohol and bleach both will just absolutely make your tools rust like right away.
Oh, yeah,
so I found
okay.
that out, too.
All right. Very
See,
good.
I know these things because I've done everything wrong probably at one time or another. And so that's how I know these things.
Don't do what she has done, ladies and gentlemen.
All right. Learn from my mistakes.
Let's talk with some other folks here. We'll go to someone on the campus, line number one. Hello.
Hi. I came a little late, so I'm not sure if this is off your topic or not. Do you have any suggestions for a kind of a species of grass that will hold up to a lot of traffic, like from dogs?
Yeah, boy, that's a tough one. And if you have an area, is this an area where it's actually a dog run and they always run in the exact same spot all the time?
Well, yeah, I think the track is not going to be knowledgeable, but the rest of it still gets a lot of wear and tear from the dogs. And
right.
It's a little bit shady also, so...
Yeah, which is the other issue. But if there's any, like, right along the fence or something where the dogs run all the time, as in back and forth, I can just about tell you, most of the grasses are just not going to tolerate that very well. If it's, like, every day in this onslaught, it's really hard for them to get established. So you may have to think about wood chips or something else in that area because it just is really tough. You can think about things like, you might think about tall fescue. It doesn't really like a lot of shade. So when you say it's kind of shady, I'm not, you know, does it get at least 8 hours or something of sun or?
When the sun is directly overhead, the middle part of the yard gets sun, but I've got trees all the way around the house. So.
Right. Well, or you might just try that every year. You might try to just use something like perennial ryegrass where you overseed it or slit seed it. You actually get a machine and it just puts the seed right down into the soil. And as perennial rye, even though it's not not an excellent grass, you know, you wouldn't want your whole lawn out of perennial rye. It does recuperate fairly quickly.
Okay.
So that might be another one. And then just realize that you're just going to have to thicken up the lawn on a fairly regular basis,
mm-hmm.
Simply because it is getting so much traffic. But usually tall fescue is pretty tough. It has a wider leaf blade, and it'll tolerate a lot of traffic.
Tall, T-A-L-L?
Right, tall fescue. And there's turf type varieties now. It doesn't look like the pasture type tall fescue, so it's a little nicer in that way.
Okay.
That would be one thing. I've had other people tell me that they really like zoysia grass.
I'm from down south.
So you know zoysia grass.
Yeah.
And it has its own issues, obviously, but I've had a few people say that it is really, they think it's really tough and seems to tolerate traffic really well.
Okay.
But it's definitely one of those. It's a warm season grass, doesn't green up till really late and that kind of thing. So it has some of its own issues. So, but that is a really tough thing when you have dogs.
Yep.
Yeah, as we found out.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Bye.
Let's talk next with someone in Watsika. That's line four. Hello.
Yeah, hi, David. Thanks for taking my call. I also am joining the conversation late, and time is running out, so two quick points, and I'll ring off. I've got a line of weeping willow trees, three of them, spaced about 15, 18 feet apart. They're about 45 feet from my house. Just was wondering if you could comment. I've heard a lot of people say, well, stay away from weeping willows because their roots are so insidious, they'll get into your water system, and you'll end up cutting them down, so on and so forth. I was wondering if there was any truth to that. And then the other question is, I have a line of bushes surrounding my house, and I've noticed very, very fine vines now that everything is dead, but they're attached to pods, like white, mm-hmm. bleached white pods.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I know that's some sort of a wood, some sort of a weed, but mm-hmm. I'm reluctant. I don't know what to do because obviously I don't want to damage the bushes themselves. And I was mm-hmm. wondering if you had any suggestions. And I'll go ahead and ring off. Thanks.
Okay. Well, as far as the willows, I think probably the big thing about willows is, and I don't know if these are true weeping willows, which get very wide. I mean, if you've ever seen a true weeping willow, they'll easily get almost as wide as they are tall. They're just huge trees. So to have that many, I'd be a little bit concerned about, simply because they get so wide. It might be just more of a traditional willow, because not all willows are weeping willows. So I think that's fine. They certainly will, you know, they love water. They'll certainly seek water areas. But as far as, you know, if there's a big issue, it's one of those things that if there's a break in the line or something within the septic system, then obviously that's going to be an issue. So I guess it depends on, I don't know if he has a septic system. I'm not sure if I caught that or not.
I don't think he said.
Yeah, I'd be a little bit concerned if they were near the septic system or somewhere along those lines. But usually they're taking advantage of some crack or something in there. So it kind of depends on how old your system is and a few things there. So may or may not, depending on where they are in location to your septic system or whatever you have. The other thing I think with willows is to keep in mind is that as they age, they tend to get a lot of canker diseases, and they're always dropping stuff, always dropping twigs. And that sometimes is not much fun because you're always picking up little twigs. So just to realize that it, depending on where this is, if this is an area where you really want it to look nice and it's a, you know, higher maintenance area, as in, you know, whatever, you want to make sure it looks nice, you may find that you're cussing at the willows all the time because they're dropping stuff all the time. So just to realize that, I've noticed that. I have some willows, and as they age, they're always dropping limbs and, you know, just doing their thing, shedding constantly. The other thing, as far as the weed, it's probably honeyvine milkweed, because they do get these pods that look like a milkweed. And they are a big issue, more because they produce lots and lots and lots of seeds. So I think it's one of those things that you're really going to have to check early in the spring, because I'm sure they've shed their seeds by now, and those pods have opened, and the seeds are all over the place. So I would check when early in the season, if you start seeing these little vines coming up, if you can go ahead and pull them out, that would be wonderful. And that would probably be your best bet, is just to try to get them early in the season, or at least make sure that those pods don't form. So you really need, that would be the other thing with any of the weeds, to make sure that they don't go to seed.
Okay.
So I think that was pretty much
it. Yeah, I think so. Yeah. At this point, it's even, other than if you want to remove them, you pull them out and try to do that without doing a lot of damage to your plants. But maybe at this point, if the seeds are already gone,
they've done what they're going to do. And it's really a matter of just watching the spring and to see what pops up. But I almost bet with those, they tend to produce lots of seeds, and you'll have lots more. So, unfortunately,
All right.
Something to look forward to.
Next up here, we'll talk with someone in Champaign, line two. Hello.
Yes, hi. I just have a question about pruning. I have a honeysuckle vine, and I'm never sure how far down to prune, and is this the right time of year to do that?
Mm-hmm. And I'm going to assume it's not Japanese honeysuckle, so let's hope. Is it one of the cultivars that's got red flowers or orange flowers?
No, this just has the yellow flowers.
Okay. Because I will tell you, Japanese honeysuckle is considered an exotic weed.
Ah.
Yeah. So technically, you're not supposed to be cultivating it.
Mm-hmm.
So you really should be cutting those out because they're very, very invasive in woodland areas. Very invasive. And that's why they ended up on the exotic weed list. So if it's that traditional yellow, and I know they're really pretty and they smell nice and all that kind of stuff, but they really are a horrible plant to have around. So my thought would be to prune it at ground level. And there's lots of cultivars of honeysuckles. They come in red flowers and orange flowers and stuff, and they're not nearly, they don't set seed. They're just much better plants and better neighbors.
Huh, okay. So I just need to go look for different cultivars.
Yeah, I really would. And for those, it's fine. You can do actually quite a bit of pruning on those, and they come back. I actually have done quite a bit of pruning on mine, and usually we'd wait until probably the 1st of March or so to do pruning on those. But.
Okay. All right. Thank
okay.
you.
All right. Sure.
Well, I'm sorry. We're going to have to stop. We have a couple of callers we can't take. We're just out of time. Sandy will be back with us again next month, so you can look for her then. The extension has a really nice website if you have internet access. There's a lot of good information on there. Of course, you can always call your local extension person, and if that's Sandy, you can call her and get at these kind of questions. And also, we have a show called Illinois Gardener on WILL-TV Thursday nights at 7. It's a live show. There's a rotating cast of various kinds
characters?
Of experts, cast of wacky characters. Diane Nolan is the host, and it's a live show, and they take calls. So there's also be another opportunity to call in and ask questions. But for now, thanks very much.
Hey, thank you.
Sandy is a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. She's on the program once a month, and we give you the opportunity to ask the questions.